Welcome to Empire Building, the podcast where we talk about building a big business and even bigger lives. I'm your co-host, Kimber Lovett-Minkiti.
And I'm Seychelle Van Poole. You know, Kimber and I were talking before we started recording today that no one really talks about money openly. Like, you never go to, I never go to like a happy hour and someone's like, you know what? Let's talk about money, right? No one wants to do that. But you know who does love talking about money? Is our 10-year-old Quinn. Quinn loves talking about money. She loves to count her money. She loves to talk about it. She loves to ask questions about it. She loves to save it, make it, spend it, hire her friends. This kid loves to be curious about money. So we
She's such an entrepreneur.
I know. She's such an entrepreneur. And I love that, like, all of the social norms have not been put on her yet of what you do and don't do. Don't worry, we're working on this. We don't, like, you know, like, go out in public and ask people how much they make when we're, like, at the grocery store. But what I love about it is that she has no fear around being curious about how we make money, we retain it, we spend it, we save it. And so it's been giving us a lot of conversation around our house. And so we were talking about what a great way to pick up the phone, you know, and call our best friend, Warren Buffett, and ask him he's on speed dial. So, you know, WB and I were having a little chat about his favorite money secrets, and we thought that we should share them with you because this has been a hot topic in our household. And I think it's a great topic for any household, even if it might be considered taboo.
I have, you know, Carter, my 12-year-old is another one who, like, wants to really understand, like, how much does that cost? How much is this trip? How much is that car?
Yes.
And so it's interesting to think about, when do we start to learn that that's not something that we're supposed to talk about? And a lot of us, when we think about, like, our money stories, like, what, how did you grow up? Were you talking about money at home? Was it ever talked about? And I think some of that's, as especially with our empire builders, when it becomes more of a topic that you're learning about, I think it's also giving permission for your kids to be more curious about it. So I love that we're going to dive into these principles today.
Me too. So today we're going to talk about our best friend, Warren Buffett's 10 money secrets that you, your family, and everybody should know. So let's dive on in, Kimber. I'm super pumped for this.
I love it. And I think this is a good one that you could put on in the car with your kids, listen to with your team, because it's one that I think invites a really important conversation that you kind of put in the room and really has a big impact.
Yes. So I love it.
Let's kick us off. Let's do the first one. I love the first one because that's a lot of what we're about, right? When I think about Her Best Life and Empire Builders, investing in yourself, even taking a few minutes whenever you're, you know, driving to work or on your walk, listening to this, invest in yourself. So Warren Buffett emphasizes the critical importance of self-improvement and continuous learning. And he believes, which we 100% agree with, that the best investment you can make in your skills and knowledge is yourself, and they can never be taken away from you. So think about what it is and how can you get really purposeful at this time of the year about investing in yourself and your knowledge.
I love that. I mean, and that's so why we built Her Best Life, right? Is to skill ourselves up. That's why we have Empire Circle. It's because we believe in that continuous pursuit of gaining knowledge. And for us in Empire Circle, it's so fun because money is not taboo. It's actually something we talk about all the time. I think the second one, this is one I have learned the hard way before, which number two is understand what you invest in. Another way to put that is invest in what you know. And I have more than once invested in a person with an industry that I knew nothing about because I loved and trusted that person. But when it came to it, I didn't have the spidey senses to know when things were going amiss or things were going sideways because I didn't have a good enough impulse and intuition to know when something was going sideways. And so, you know, Warren Buffett is famously known for investing in the stock market and investing in businesses, two things he knows really intimately well. And when Nick and I take a look at some of the things that we have made the most money in and the biggest wealth in, it's in things that we know. It's in real estate assets. It's in people assets and the businesses that we know and can sniff out and understand if they're succeeding or failing. And so, you know, Warren Buffett, you don't see him like investing in technology companies because he feels like he doesn't know enough to be able to predict their future. And so I think about it of like, for me, I've really learned that if I want to go far in an investment, I need to know that investment category or that sector really, really, really well, because I'm going to be much more successful in that than trying to start over in a sector that I don't have any history in.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that really takes number one and just amplifies it.
Yeah.
Because when you are investing in yourself, which is your knowledge, your information, your skill set, then you understand at a higher level what you want to invest in. So if you're like, hey, I've been doing real estate investments, but I really want to get into something else, then being able to first become a student of that industry, of that business model, so that you're able to make a really smart decision. And I would agree, say, I mean, some of our investments where we learned our biggest lessons, which also means we lost some money, are the things we didn't understand. And to your point, we were investing in people, we were investing in a good salesperson, somebody we believed in, and we didn't know enough about the business that we were going with.
Yeah.
So that takes us into number three, which is focusing on quality business. So when you're understanding it, you also want to think about businesses and companies that have that durable competitive advantage. They've got strong management and leadership and consistent earning growth. And this is where like we've had to get really fierce recently around like, it's just the math. Like if the business model, if the economics, if the, you know, the problem that they're seeking to solve in the world, if it's not clear, then as, you know, magnetic as the person is, or, you know, as amazing as we might really believe in them, that that investment in that particular opportunity is not the right opportunity. And that's been a lot of failed learning.
Oh.
This is, we need to actually let the business stand for itself. And ultimately, like, does it have a moat, right? We hear Gary talk about that a lot. Is there a moat? Build a moat around your real estate business. Does that business have a moat around it? Does it have a unique edge? And one new question the last couple of years that I learned, you know, again, through a hard lesson was, who are your competitors? Because sometimes when you're looking at a business that you don't know, it actually might sound like it's solving an amazing problem.
Right.
But by asking them, who are your competitors in this space, you actually might find that they've actually solved a problem that may be new for you, but isn't new for the industry that they're in.
When I think about too, how many times have you sat in a business pitch where they say, this is a $1 billion market, and if we could just get 10% of that market, we have a $100 million business, right? Like, how many times have you heard that in a pitch? Like, now when I hear that, I'm like, oh no, that's the first thing I think about is, oh no, this is the same pitch I've heard 400 times, you know? So how well do they really know the market? You know, and the first time I heard that, I was like, that's amazing. And then after you fail a couple times, and you're like, actually, this is a very naive approach to the business model. So, you know, I think about too, when we look at market durability, I take the outcome and the predictions that that business is making and I cut them in half. And I say, if I could be comfortable with half of this, is that a good investment? And if I'm not comfortable with a 50% of what they're predicting, then it's not an investment for me that we're going to make.
Yeah, that's a really nice way to think about it, right? Yeah. Like really cut in half what their sort of outlook is. And they're often saying, this isn't a worst case scenario.
Yes.
So then if you're cutting that in half and the time, which we're going to go into next, then I think you could ask yourself a different question.
Such a good point. Yeah. And number four for us is having a long-term perspective in your investing. And Kimber just alluded to that, which is if you take the predictions and you cut it in half, but maybe you also say, I'm going to cut it in half and it's going to take two times longer than what they're telling me it's going to take for this business to succeed. Are you comfortable with that? Right. And Buffett's known for his long-term investment horizon probably more than anybody else as a seasoned investor, right? He advocates buying stocks with the intention of holding them indefinitely. And I love one of his famous quotes, which is, our favorite holding period is forever. Like, he doesn't look at it as like, if I could sell it in 3 years, if I could sell it in 5 years, you know, he really looks at the importance of patience and the importance of compounding interest over time to make his money. And I love that he considers it that way, because I think so many people are impatient with the results that they're looking for and they cut bait before the business has actually had the opportunity to go through the ups and downs it needs to learn its lessons to succeed in a massive way. So are we being patient with our investments and with ourselves and putting pressure on the right activity and the right business model so that it can actually see itself through in the long-term run?
Yeah, I love this. And for a lot of, I know a lot of our listeners and you and I say are very active in the real estate space. Mm-hmm. And so I take this long-term perspective, even when we're doing what might be a traditional, like fix up, flip it, put it back on the market. So we always run a pro forma as though we had to hold that property for the long-term. Something explosive happens and all of a sudden, which actually happened to us, right? In the early market, we first got in 2008, 8, 9, 10, these rehabs that we were in the middle of that looked so great on the Performa, all of a sudden weren't. And we ended up having to hold them until 2017, 2018, right? So the lesson in that was long-term perspective, both from your business investments, but also from your real estate. When you're coming in and thinking that something's going to be in and out, like you said, that quick idea, 6 months, we're in and we're out. What happens if you had to hold that property for 6 years? Does it still work? What kind of finance? Like, all, how does that change your investment decision?
That's so smart. That's so smart.
Yeah. And that takes us to number five, which has been, I think, one of my favorite principles, mm-hmm. which has become a little harder at this season of my life, but I think was a critical one as we're building a lot of our wealth and business. Live simply and avoid debt. And what does that mean, right? Like Buffett, of course, is known for that frugality, despite his immense wealth, like living in the same mm-hmm. house he bought in 1958 and kind of avoiding these unnecessary luxuries. And even when he is, he's never using debt to finance those investments. And you hear that a lot. Like that, like if you really are so excited for that new fancy car, like do you have enough passive income coming in to be able to like offset that? So you're not taking out new debt, you're allowing the distribution, the dividend from a performing asset to help fund the fun part of what you might want to have. This is hard, but I think that's really, we just did this actually with our Empire Circle just mm-hmm. the other day in our financial builder saying, hey, what does, the first step is understanding what you need to live your best life every single month for you and your family. And when you have that, right, then you can sort of, hey, we understand how much money we actually need to have that ultimately allows you to build that big life.
I think that's awesome. And, you know, it was something we did accidentally, but I think it was such a gift for us was when we 1031 exchanged one of our rental properties that was paid off and sold it to a team member. We 1031 to our lake house up in Michigan. And it was so nice to be able to pay cash for that. The ability to not have the stress, to not have to worry about like covering the cost of something that's more of a for us item instead of an investment item has been so freeing. To not have to put absolute pressure on that investment to make a return because it's our happy place. And so I think you're so right when you can use cash and expendable income, but not necessary income to fund the luxuries, it changes the game and the stress level that you have around those enjoyment pieces. So I think that's awesome.
And I think that leverage, we see that today as markets are contracting, as just even the available home sales has contracted so significantly and so rapidly over the last year, that being over leveraged really does amplify a mistake.
Yeah.
If you've got a big note, you took out a hard money to do a rehab, and it looked really good, but now that 6 months is 9 months. And so now making that monthly payment amplifies that mistake. So not only are you having a hard time, you were over calculated in how long something was going to take, but now the pain and the pressure, I mean, it really is one of the things that can lead to financial pain and ultimately ruin.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
Hey there, Empire Builders. We have the biggest announcement. We just heard that Brianna Wiest, the brilliant mind behind The Mountain Is You and The Pivot Year, is going to be our keynote speaker and part of the VIP experience this year at Her Best Life in sunny Miami, Florida. If you have ever read her books or heard about her, you know what an incredible experience this is going to be. We were able to negotiate a limited number of VIP tickets for a more intimate experience with Brianna, but there's only a few available. So go on over to herbestlife.com/events to secure your VIP ticket today. Hope to see you there.
Number six is one I love, which is he believes in value investing. And I think put another way, it's basically right. If you buy right and you buy something that is undervalued to begin with, you're very rarely going to go amiss if you have to sell it. And so he believes in buying companies and stocks undervalued and then giving value add to those so that he can sell it for a higher price down the road or keep it and make more money off of it down the road. And I think about that in our terms for real estate too. We put a lot of pressure on ourselves to really buy right with real estate, do really deep analysis early in the process so that we clearly understand that if, in your point, right, if the market were to turn tomorrow, could I get back out of it? And we look at that with our clients too. Like that's another thing we look at with our clients. We have a couple clients right now that have bought property and they're in a situation that they need to sell pretty quickly. I am so thankful we took a look at the numbers walking in to say, if you had to sell in 6 months, a year or 2 years, could you get back out of this? And so if you're buying right in the beginning, it's always going to make the exit easier because you're going to have more options as to whether or not you stay or go.
Yeah. That's so such a good point. And that really takes us to number 7, which is like, right, you're talking about that emotional, staying rational and disciplined in your investment. And we really have used the construct of like a pro forma or something that we plug in. What's your expected return, right? Say that's what you're talking about when you're going in on these investments. So if you're talking about a real estate investment or a business investment, for us in our real estate investments, what's the expected, like what's our return? What mm-hmm. return are we going to be happy with? So that when you plug the numbers in, the math is the math. Yeah. And sometimes there is an emotional experience. Like you, maybe you love the house, you love the neighborhood. It's a
great
exactly
location.
It's a great location, right? That emotional control in investing is critical. Mm-hmm. Like you got to stay calm and you're rational, especially appreciating those market fluctuations. And you got to remember, like if this is an investment decision, it's not the house that you're going to live with your family forever. So I've watched a lot of new real estate agents seeking to turn investors. And this is one of the places that they go wrong. They get so excited about the emotional experience that they're having around a house
yes.
that they lose the rational place of, was this the right investment? And staying in those budget lines, right? Like you get really excited about something and then you go off wild on one area and you create a big problem.
Yeah.
So not following the crowd, holding to what your financial return and expectations are, and keeping that rational and discipline mm-hmm. when you're investing.
Well, I think about too with our clients, so many times an emotional investment of a house becomes a quote unquote investment for them. And if you hold it long enough, an investment, like whether it's emotional or not, will always flush itself back out. But so many times I see homeowners that hold their emotional investment of where they are literally going to sleep and raise their family and have a dog and put in a pool and throw their birthday parties. They're then holding that to the standard of the stock market or of another investment that's non-emotional. And I say to our clients all the time, you have to decide if this is a home you love and it's overpriced, you have to decide if that is an emotional investment for you that you are okay with. Sometimes paying a little more for something that you emotionally are going to love, but you understand that walking in is different than just buying something because it's a good deal, whether or not your family fits in there. So I think just also it's okay to make emotional investments, but you need to call it what it is and not be delusional about the process of that. So
yeah, I love that. And I think the ability for the market oftentimes, and certainly, right, we haven't had a 10-year period where real estate hasn't appreciated. So the long term will often correct a mistake.
That's right.
In other investment areas, it absolutely will not, right? Because businesses fold, they go under, they run out of runway. So I know for me, like taking the real estate lens of that, of like, well, I got a long-term view, has actually burned me on business investments.
Me too.
Because those are places like crash and burn, and then you're pumping more cash in and they don't come back. So if you're coming at this from the real estate lens, make sure that emotional investing that sometimes the market will just make you pay a little bit longer on
yeah.
is not going to hold true when you have an emotional experience on a business investment.
I love that. Well, number 8 kind of talks to that a little bit, which is reinvesting your profits back in the business. Instead of pulling all the profit out of the company and just pocketing it for you for personal use for later or for other investments, right? Borrowing from one business to pay the other, borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. You really have to be careful to make sure that if you are investing in a business or in an asset and you are taking profits from that, you need to be mindful of, would this business actually be better if I'm reinvesting the profits in this to grow it bigger? Or am I mindful that if I'm pulling profits out of this, is it going to hurt this asset or this business first? So we always try to look at, I was actually talking to one of our friends in our circle yesterday, and the two conversations we had were, number one, you can't hold a business accountable for your personal life, right? To fund your personal life. It is a business and it does not have feelings and it does not care about what your standards of living are. But the second thing that we talked about was, you cannot hold one business accountable to pay for the other business. And so if you've taken loans out or have a sideways situation over here, it is unfair to go to the other business that you're invested in and say, well, this one has to succeed this much more because this one is failing. You can't do that. it's unfair to that asset. So you have to really make sure that you are evaluating each individual asset in its own and looking at an emotional, do I need to be reinvesting the profits here? Is it wise to be taking the profits right now? Yes, my personal life may need it, but is that actually what the business needs? And so really making sure that you're looking at that to do what is best for the business first, and then what's good for you second, will always make sure that you are staying a savvy business investor instead of a lifestyle investor.
100%. I could not agree with that more. And I love that these build on each other.
Yeah.
So that this number nine is being prepared for market volatility. And that's exactly what Say is talking about, right? When you're expecting and you've built an expectation for a return on the business that you're using either to fund something else or to fund a lifestyle, and not holding reserves, not being prepared for that volatility in the market. And so then it can take a stretch, right, of a business that has been throwing off cash flow or performing well. All of a sudden, you have a market impact, which we don't need to tell anybody. Most of our listeners have experienced this very much so over the last couple of years in the volatility, positively and negatively, in some of our markets. Mm-hmm. But what does that actually mean? What I love what Buffett's saying is, like, one, it's inevitable. It's inevitable, right? And how do you look at that volatility as an opportunity rather than a threat?
I love that.
And one of the major ways is that you actually have reserves, you keep some cash on hand, because that gets you prepared to buy quality assets, stocks, other businesses, other real estate assets at discounted prices during market downturns. I'm living this right now in my life, right? Crisis creates opportunity.
Yes.
So you have to be in a space where you are positioned to harness and harvest that opportunity when it shows up.
I love that. And the last one, which I think puts a perfect bow on all of this when you look at Buffett's habits that he has built, is cultivating good investing habits. And WB, because now we're on like initials only basis, my bestie, stresses, right? He stresses the importance of cultivating those good financial habits early in life. It is really hard to save your way out of problems later in life. So if you can encourage your kids, encourage your 20-somethings, encourage your 30-somethings in your life to really invest smartly and start saving money, create a cash cushion of a buffer, right? And always have that. Your stress levels as you get older will be so much less. And I think about that, like we've talked several times on the podcast about how we lived a high, high, low, low life as a kid where we had lots of money and then we had no money, and we had lots of money and we had no money. And so it always created for me this fear that it would run away. It could leave at any minute. And so I became a squirrel of like, there's never going to be enough. There's never going to be enough security because it's always going to go away. And Nick was such an amazing partner for me when we got married to say, when is enough enough? And what's the number where you're going to sleep at night? And we've been together now 24 years, married for 18 of those. And that's weird. We have a voting aged kid, like marriage. That's kind of nuts. But being married for that long, we've never gone below that cash cushion. Once we saved up to that, we keep that cash cushion in the bank and we adjust it as our lifestyle increases or adjust it as our investing increases. But through these crazy several markets we've been in, I have not lost sleep at night knowing I couldn't pay our family's bills. I still lose sleep making sure the businesses are running and paying for all of our people and we have cash reserves that we need to invest in the things that we want. But I'm not losing sleep over, am I going to lose our home? And it's been such a great advice from Warren Buffett that I think all of us can live behind, which is if you can keep cash reserves at a healthy level for whatever that is for you so you can sleep at night, you're always going to make smarter, sounder, less emotional decisions to be able to move the needle in the direction you want in your investing and business journey. And so it doesn't matter what that number is. You just need to decide what it is for you and stick with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the habit that you highlight there, Say, that's so critical in this is actually the conversation. There's such power in the conversation, right? You have a life partner, your business partners, like what is that number for yourself? Being able to talk about it, because a lot of the conflict we see and a lot of people, like we said, like Quinn has given us permission to talk about money, but a lot of us didn't grow up in a way that even in your marriages that you talk about money. And being able to establish, that was one of our big tensions of like, hey, one person's more aggressive in how they want to invest or what they need in the bank, and somebody else is more conservative. But being able to like have the habit of having a conversation around it, talk about what that pressure is.
Yes.
Making sure it's actually rooted in facts of like, well, what are our monthly expenses and what could we cut if things got tight?
Yeah.
Then I think actually sets you up that some of these investment decisions Like I did a recent investment into a business that I did exactly what we just said. I invested in a founder who I think is amazing and a really cool business concept that I'm not super familiar with. And so I made sure in my head that I was 100% ready to lose that investment, right? I was seeing it as an investment in her and the business, but I was ready to lose it. And that means you have the cash that you could do that. It wasn't going to impact me personally financially, right? My family, if all of a sudden that business venture doesn't work.
Yeah.
So I think thinking about how you have those conversations and how much you have to maybe make some of those more fun and exciting investments that could hit or could not.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, I love today because I think Warren Buffett has gifted us so many lessons, and particularly around business and investing and building wealth. And so Warren, our bestie, thank you for these amazing 10 tips for your wealth secrets. And if you guys have enjoyed this episode today, please share it with a friend, share it with someone that needs to hear this, and go out there and leave us a 5-star rating and review. And if you're wanting to have more conversations like this, I just want to invite you to come join us at Her Best Life's flagship event, because these are the things that we do and talk about so that we can all grow together and move forward. So y'all go out there and build your big business, but more importantly, build that even bigger
life.
Yes, I love it.
Thanks, A.
Bye,
always
guys.
Fun to do with you.
You too.
Bye.